Thank you for listening to this message from the pulpit of Coon Rapids Baptist Church in the suburbs of Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Our church has long been going through a series on Sunday nights in the book of Job, and it's ironic that here it's been just about a year, and part of that is because of Christmas and Thanksgiving schedules where we had different things on Sunday night, as well as during some of this COVID-19 season where our Sunday night services have been disrupted. But we've come now to chapter number 38, and I'm just really excited because I believe that this study in the book of Job will dovetail very much with situations that people may be going through as a result of this crisis. So here we are in the book of Job, chapter number 38. And when you are suffering, when life is hard, when things are unfair, when bad things happen to good people, when wicked people seem to get by with murder, there is something that is on our minds, there is something that is on our lips, and that is a whining question to God of why? And we want to ask that question of God. We want God to explain to us why we're going through what we're going through. Because based upon what we know, and based upon the facts that we know and some detail that we know, it just doesn't make sense that God would be allowing us to go through what we're facing in our lives. Based upon what we know, God seems unfair. Based upon what we know, God seems unjust here. And so we have this question in our minds, and we're saying here, why, God, are you allowing us to go through those things? Why are you allowing us to go through this? And we want God to give us an answer. Have you ever been in that place where you've wanted God to give you an answer? And in our passage here, that's exactly where Job is. Job has suffered. Job has been a very godly person here, and Job is determined that God is going to give him some answers. And when we come to chapter 38 through 41, God is going to answer Job. But I'm sure you can guess it, God's answers aren't going to be exactly what Job expected. They're going to be far different answers. But let me tell you, they are the exact answer that Job needed. And friend, I want to tell you, when you have that question why, when you have that question why, that's the exact answer that you're going to need as well. And so we want God to answer, and God gives us an answer. When you don't understand why, when everything you know seems to be indicating that God isn't handling this right, God answers. Let's look in our text here and see what God's answer is in very brief form. Verse number 1, then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, are you following along in your scriptures there? Got your Bible open on your lap in front of you? Let's look at verse number 2. It says this, who is this that darkeneth counsel by words? Notice this now, without knowledge. God looks at Job and says, Job, you're darkening advice and counsel. You're putting things in the dark that should be brought to light. And Job, the reason that you're doing it is because you're speaking words without knowledge. Job, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know everything that is going on here in your life. Job, you don't know the whole story here. And friend, I want you to understand that if there's some area in your life and in your experience where you are frustrated at God and where you just don't know why God would allow something to happen, why a disease would come, why a tragedy would come, why God would allow something unfair to happen, God has an answer for you. Would you let God respond to you today here? God wants to ask you the same question He asked Job. And here's the title of our message. It is that question in my own words. It's this. Do you really know what is best? I mean, do you really know what is best for your life? You sit there and you say, God, I can't believe you're allowing this to happen to me. And you're basing that on what you know. And God looks at you and He looks at Job and He says, but do you really know what's best for your life? Do you? And listen, God is going to give Job a final exam. And His final exam is going to cover 7 different topics. Now listen, It's that time of year in which college kids have finished up, they're finishing up their exams here, and high school kids are finishing things up. It's exam time. And so, here is something. You came to church today, and I have an exam, I have a test for you, but I have good news. There are only 7 questions on the exam. God wants to know what you know about these areas. And if you know the right answers to these 7 questions on the exam, then you will know enough to question God. Now, wait. I wonder if you're nervous about God giving you a final exam. You didn't get a chance to study this morning before you came to church, did you? Well, don't worry, this examination will only test you in 7 areas and make sure that you know every single thing there is to know about each one of those 7 areas. And it's going to cover some very simple things, subjects like geology, oceanography, optics, invisibility, meteorology, astronomy, and nephology. Now, don't chicken out. Don't walk away from your screen. Don't leave the service here, because you're concerned about this test. If you think that you know better than God, if you think that you know better than God about how He's running your life right now, then all you gotta do is man up, as God tells Job to do in verse number 3, man up and take the exam here and pass the exam, and then you can question God. Not sure about that. Well, let's look at the exam here. And by the way, I'm going to give you the test right here in the service. So for each one of the different questions, at some point in time, I'm going to ask you the question, and you have to answer out loud in front of your whole family, in front of everybody here in the auditorium, with an out loud answer. All right? So you be paying attention, and we're going to see if you can pass this test or not. Category number 1, this comes from verses 4 through 7. Let's see how much you know about Earth or geology. Now, in order to establish the fact of how much you know about the Earth here, first of all, we have to ask the question, as he asks in verse number 4, if you were there on the very day God created the Earth. We have to consider that subject. Because if you weren't there on the very day that God created the earth, then you don't know everything about it. And you would have to be able to tell me the very name of the person that God used to measure out the earth. The very name of the person that God used as a contractor, maybe we might say, when he did the construction, if I can put it in those everyday terms. That's verse number 5. You would have to be able to explain to me exactly how God hooked all the foundations of the earth together and made it so the whole thing doesn't collapse or explode or disintegrate or fall apart in that way. And listen, do you remember that when God put it all together, I'm sure you were there when God did all of this to the earth, did you remember that God had background music? God likes to work to music because verse number 7 says, when the morning stars, the angels, sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. God is building, He's making the earth, and the angels were singing. You remember that, don't you? You were there, right? To know everything about the earth, you would have to know all of these things to have been there from the very beginning. Many of you know that I've been working to find a conduit that 40 years ago was buried between 2 of our buildings here. That conduit buried there, I didn't know it even existed till a couple months ago, and then I didn't know exactly where it was. How am I going to find this? Do you know how I found it? I found it by talking to Brian, the person who helped to put it in. He was there. He has the knowledge of it because he was there when it was put in. I don't have the knowledge of it because I wasn't there. But he did the work. He's been around since that time. He knows those things and I don't. So listen, here's your first question. You got to answer it out loud wherever you're at. It's a simple yes or no. All right, here's the question. Do you know all the details of how God created dirt? Your answer is? No. You got to answer out loud. The answer is no. Well, no, if you don't, I want to tell you that God knows. And God knows about everything in this life. And if God knows about everything in this life, isn't it possible that maybe God knows more about your situation than what you know, and so maybe you ought to trust Him with your life? Now, hey, you missed one. But good news, there are six more. So let's look at the next one. It's found in verses 8 through 11. All right? So we've talked about seeing how much you know about earth. Number two, let's see how much you know about water. This is oceanography, if you will. And verse number 8, he asks the question, or who shut up the sea with doors when it break forth as if it had issued out of the womb? When I made the cloud the garment thereof and thick darkness a swaddling band for it. And so here in these verses, and I'm not going to be able to read all of them, but water is pictured as powerful. If you've been to Niagara Falls or if you've been to the shore during a great storm, you know how powerful water really is. And water is pictured almost in a way like a human being born. God created it and it bursts forth out of the womb and here's this raging power and God puts a garment of the clouds upon it and wraps it in a swaddling band and then he puts it in a playpen so it can play and it's got all these bars around it and he says, you can play and do all that you want, but it's got to stay right here. You can't go all these other places. You got to stay right here in the playpen, as it were. God put this fence up around it. It talks about doors and then the bar on it. You think of the old Western type gate on the fort and then they put the bar in front of it so that you couldn't come in. That's what it's referring to there when it talks about the bar being put on it there. Now, when you walked along the ocean, if you've been on vacation, when you walked along the shores of the Great Lakes or something like that, did you see the bars there? I wonder if maybe you saw the doorways that were there to keep the water in. I wonder if maybe you noticed all of that here. And so I wonder if maybe you know how God locked up the waters. Maybe you do. So let's ask the second question. Here's the second question. Be sure to answer it out loud. Do you know how God put all the different limits on the water to keep it from going too far? Do you know that? No. I don't know either. I've never seen the bars up. I've never seen the doors up. I've never seen all of that. I don't understand all of that. But God knows all about it, and He knows about life on this earth, and so He probably knows more about my life and how things should operate here than I do. Let's look at our third field of study. Let's see how much you know about light. All right? Now, this one's an easy one. He brings it out here. We're down in verse number 12, hast thou commanded the morning since thy days and caused the dayspring to know his place? He starts off with kind of an easy one here. This is light. This is optics. And listen, let me bring to your mind, maybe, I'm sure there's been a time in which you have decided when a day will start. Right? I mean, you've decided when to get up, or you decided when the workday is going to start, or maybe you decided when breakfast is going to be served and start the day. You've decided when the day is going to start. But you haven't done, or maybe you have, I don't know what verse number 12 says. I wonder if you've ever decided when the sun's going to get up. I think right now it gets up around 5:40 in the morning or so. Maybe today being Sunday morning, you said, you know, I want to sleep in a little bit this morning. I'm going to make the sun come up at 7 in the morning. I know how to tell the sun, the morning, the day spring or the dawn to come up a little bit later. I'm sure you know how to do that, right? Or verse number 13, that the light will take hold of the ends of the earth. You know how to put enough light on the planet to cover from one horizon to the other. And shine that much light. You know how to stretch out all those extension cords. You know how many light bulbs you would need. You know how big of a generator and a power plant you would need. You know how many fuses you'd have to put in there to shine enough light to cover the entirety of the globe from horizon to horizon. And wait, you can do it every single day. Turn them on in the morning, shut them off at night. You can handle that, right? Notice what he says at the end of verse number 13, that the wicked might be shaken out of it. And verse 15 talks about the wicked as well. And from the wicked, their light is withholden, and the high arms shall be broken. He's talking about the light here. And in verse number 14, he talks about it being turned like the clay to the seal. You know, in Old Testament times, they would have the clay laid out flat. And they'd take their ring, their seal, and they would put the seal down into the clay. And before that, the clay was flat. But once the seal went down into the clay, there were ridges left over from that ring. And what he's saying is, listen, when it's dark out, you don't know if there's a mountain in front of you or not. You don't know if you're going to be walking along and all of a sudden you're going to hit a little dip and you're going to stumble and you don't know there's a pothole there or not. You can't see all of that terrain and all of the ups and downs. But when the light comes, you can see all the dips and all the raised parts, like what happens when the seal goes into the clay. Light does that. Light shines all across the fields and the golf courses and the hills and lights it all up. You know how to do that, right? Make everything be able to be seen each and every day. You know, light is one of those things, like verse 13 talks about, that drives wicked people away. They do their deeds in the evil times, but light causes them to run the other direction. And what God has given a little bit of a hint here is, he's saying, you know what? The person who controls light is the person who can send the wicked people scattering. And light describes life as well. And so when he talks in verse number 15 about withholding the light from the wicked, he says, I can take the light from them. I can take their life from them. He describes that in verse number 15. And the high arm is kind of the proud, rebellious arm that's raised up against God. And he says, surely you know how to break that. Whoever can control the light can control wicked people. Whoever can control the light can stop wicked people from doing their deeds and bring down their arm of wickedness. And so that's what he's talking about here in this passage. So let's look at our third question here. Here's your third question answered out loud. Do you know how to control the light? No. Well, God knows how to control the light. And God knows everything about life. And so maybe indeed he knows what's best about my life and your life. Well, let's go to the fourth section. And this is verses 16 down through 21. And there are a bunch of different topics that he discusses in these verses. And I kind of lumped them all together under this word, the unseen. Let's see how much you know about the unseen world. This is invisibility here. And so the first thing he talks about in verse number 16 is the ocean floor. Hast thou entered into the springs of the sea, or hast thou walked in the search of the depth? I'm sure you've been on vacation and maybe you've been to the ocean and one time in your life you got to walk along the edge of the ocean and you're an expert on the ocean now. Maybe you've been snorkeling. Maybe like some of the people in our church, you've been snorkeling multitudes and multitudes and multitudes of times. And so you're an expert on snorkeling. I'm sure you know everything about the ocean. Maybe you've been in one of those subs that goes down deep, 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 all the way down to the bottom of the Mariana's Trench. And you've explored some of those places. I don't know how far deep it is and how much people can go down to see all of that. But even if they could see all of that, do they know about every square mile of the ocean floor? Our family had some privilege this past summer, right at a year ago, to be in Florida and to swim swim with some manatees. And then after that was done, we got to go and swim with some of the springs. And here's this place where water is coming right up out of the ground. And in the summer, it's so chilly, it's so cold. And we could swim down and you could feel the coldness coming right up out of it. We have been in a place where we have swam, is that the right word? We've been swimming with the springs there. So automatically, we must be experts on all of the ocean and all of the water. I'm sure not. He describes in verse number 17, death. Hey, I'm sure you've seen it, right? The gate to death. Like, where somebody actually goes through. You know where that is, right? Like, when they die here on earth, you've seen their body and then go like through a gate. You've seen that, right? That's kind of what verses 17 is saying. Verse number 18, Have you perceived the breadth of the earth? Declare if thou knowest it all. Now, maybe you could get on Siri or Google and you could ask them or Alexa or whatever how many miles it is around the earth. But how much do you really know about the distance of the earth? I enjoy going on bike rides with our family. And one of the things I enjoy about the Twin Cities here is there's so many bike paths and we can go on them. And oftentimes we work hard to try to find new ones because there's so many different things to see. We've lived here for 7 years now, and as we go along to all these different bike places, there are still places that we haven't seen, and those are only the bike trails in one state, in one metropolitan area of that state. Do you know the breadth of the earth? All the different places? And he talks about in verse number 19, where is the way where light dwelleth? You know the path to light? Do you know where light is kept? Where is darkness? Where's the home of darkness? Have you seen that before? And I love what verse number 21 says. Will you look at that in your Bibles? Verse 21. Knowest thou it because thou wast then born? Or because the number of thy days is great? I'm sure you know all these things because you're 12 years old. Or because you're 32 years old. Or because you're 72 years of age. You know all of these different things here about the unseen. About the invisible world that is out there here. So let me ask you this fourth question. Do you know all about the unseen things of this world? No. Well, God knows all about the unseen things of this world. And He knows everything about life on earth. And so maybe He knows better about my life than I do. Let's look at the fifth one. The fifth one is, let's see how much you know about storms. He's talking about storms here. And let's look down at verse number 22. This is kind of the longest section, verse 22 to 30. Just follow along in your Bible. Let me just bring out a couple big points here. In verse number 22, do you see it there? He's talking about snow. And what's the other one? Do you see it there? It's hail. And then he comes down and he talks about other ones. Verse number 26, he talks about rain. And verse number 28, he talks about rain as well. Verse 29, what's the one there? That's right, it's ice and the hoary frost. And verse number 30, he talks about things being frozen there. He's talking about storms. He's talking about weather. And this is meteorology here. And so when we think about these things, we remember the fact that scientists are still trying to figure all of these things out here. We laughed here just with our family recently that meteorology, that is the one field in which you can consistently be wrong and still keep your job. We laugh all the time about how much, you know, the storm's supposed to be bringing 15 inches of snow, 10 to 15 inches of snow, and it brings in 6 inches of snow. And here he's describing here the storms. Can you control the storms? He asks. So let me just ask this question. Do you know everything about storms? Once again, our answer is no. Well, God knows everything about them. And God knows everything about your life on this earth. Let me give you two more. Verse number 33, he talks about the stars. Let's see how much you know about stars. What field is this? This is astronomy. And so he talks about the stars and he mentions several different constellations in verses 31 and 32 there. He talks about all of these different things. Over Christmas, our family went to a planetarium show, a very brief show, and yet I learned a lot about stars there. The European Space Agency, get this now, in 2015, they said that the number of stars is 1 times 10 to the 24th power of stars in the observable universe. So take a 1 and put 24 zeros behind it, and that's how many stars there are. To make it simple, a trillion is 12, has 12 zeros. So 1 times 10 to the 24th power would be a trillion trillions. Now listen, if you just count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, at this rate, it would take you 32 years to get to a billion. But there's not a billion stars. There's not a trillion stars. There's a trillion trillions of stars that are out there. And no doubt, you've got them all counted. You've got them all named. You've got them all organized, that this one's going here and this is where it's going to be. That you've got them all in their place, right? So let me just ask you our sixth question. Do you know all about the stars? The answer is no. But God does. And God knows about everything in life. So maybe He knows better how to run my life than I do. All right, it's time for the last question. So let's see if we can get at least one question right. Now, the subject is interesting. It's the subject of nephology. I don't even know what that word means, except I think it means clouds. Good luck on your last quiz question here. And so we come down to verses 34 through 38, where he talks about learning about clouds. I'm sure you know about clouds. Some people say there's the nimbus clouds and the noctilucent clouds and the cumulus clouds and all sorts of things about clouds that I've forgotten since my high school days of studying physical science or whatnot there. But here in verse number 34, canst thou lift up thy voice to the clouds and that the abundance of the waters may cover thee? I'm sure you know how to call down rain whenever you want it. Canst thou send lightnings? Oh, you know, there have been times in which that person is just really annoying you. And we all laugh about saying, if I was God, I would send a lightning bolt down to toast him. Well, this one kind of asks the question, do I even know how to send a lightning bolt to toast him? He gives some other things about it. Verse number 37, who can number the clouds in wisdom? Got all the clouds numbered. I'm sure that you do. I mean, obviously, if you're going to control them, if you're going to know everything about them, you have to number them. Like you might say, there's cloud number 923 flying over Georgia, and it's getting ready to drop pea-sized hail on Georgia. And there is cloud number 48 flying over Israel, and it is really giving them a little break from that intense summer heat there in Israel. And there is cloud number 576 flying low to the ground in London and bringing quite a fog into London there. If you're going to know all about the clouds, you'd have to have them all numbered so that you can control them and direct them here. Nephology, you know all about the clouds. And right in the middle of all this discussion about the clouds here, he inserts a little statement. Did you notice verse 36? Who hath put wisdom in the inward parts? Knowledge. Who helped us to know what we know? You say, I know so much, and certainly God has got it all wrong. Well, where did you get your ability to know all of these things? You got it from God. God gave you that knowledge. God is the source of all that knowledge. So, we might summarize this question in this way. Here's the last question. Do you know how to make it rain? No. And about this time, we kind of feel a little bit uneasy. I feel sorry for you because you didn't get any right. I feel sorry for myself because I didn't get any right here. Maybe I feel like I don't know that much after all. How in the world can I question God about what He's allowing to come into my life when I don't know all of these things? And if you're a bit disappointed in the results of your test, please know that I am too. And please know that Job didn't pass the test either. Let's skip the second part of the test. And let's go to chapter 40 and see how Job responds. Let me break this down in a practical way here and we'll be done. Chapter 40, as God concludes His questions, let's look at verse 3. How does Job respond? Job 40, verse 3. Then Job answered the Lord and said, behold, I am vile. The word vile came from the way they thought in that culture. They would think of things as either being valuable and therefore weighty and heavy. That which was honorable was heavy. And that which was dishonorable, that which was cursed, that which was vile, was that which was light, lightly esteemed. And Job says, when I look at God's greatness, I feel vile. I'm so light. I'm so small. I'm so insignificant. I'm just a nothing. Look at all God knows. I don't feel like I know anything. But that's not all how Job responds. Notice what the rest of verse 3 says. Verse 4, "What shall I answer thee? I will lay my hand upon my mouth. Once have I spoken, but I will not answer. Yea, twice, but I will proceed no further." Job saw his smallness. And number 2, Job shut his mouth. He had this awesome, freeing position now where Job looks and Job says, "Listen, I'm done talking to God. I'm done arguing about this thing. I'm done trying to prove my point. I'm just going to be quiet." And friend, that's an awesome place to be. And when you get to the place that you see that God knows all of these things and you don't know everything, you'll get to the place where you see how small and vile and little you are, and you will see that your best thing to do is to just shut your mouth and be quiet and just trust God that He knows what He's doing and He can handle your life. He knows what's best for you. Just trust Him. He knows. "God, do you want to tell me that you want to do thus and so with my life? God, I don't understand it all. I don't know why you'd want me to do that. I don't know why you would want that to be done, or I don't understand all about those things. But God, I know that you know a lot more than I do. And so I'm going to be quiet and I'm just going to obey and I'm just going to trust you in that way." Maybe you ask God, maybe you're wondering about why God would allow you to have that physical problem. And to your way of thinking, in your knowledge, it just doesn't make sense. But you go to God and you say, "God, I don't understand. I don't know everything, but I know that you do. And so I'm going to trust that you know what is best for my life." Or maybe you go to God and you say, "God, that wife was in her prime. She was a godly lady, and God, she had kids still at home. And God, my way of thinking, I just don't know why you would have allowed her to die at that young age and leave all of that behind. It doesn't make sense to me. But God, you know better than I know. I'm small, I'm vile. And so I can trust that you know what is best." And see, over and over in our lives, we look to the place where we say, "God, you know more than I do. And I'm just going to trust you. I'm just going to be quiet. I'm just going to see how small I really am. And I'm going to trust you." I was speaking with Jason in our church recently, and God promoted Jason to a position of leadership in his company. And now he's a supervisor. And he told me that it's very different now being a supervisor. He's been an employee and a worker of the company and saw the company and saw his job and his work from the worker's side, if I can say it that way, from the layman's perspective, the everyday guy. And now he's a supervisor. And he says now he can see why those supervisors made those decisions the way they did. At the time, he didn't know why they made all those decisions. At the time, he didn't understand why they would have these things to be done. But now, he can see the supervisor side, and now he understands that the supervisors who knew something more had their reasons. And listen, friend, that's the way it is in our life. We're on this side, and God's on that side as the supervisor, and we don't know all the reasons. We simply have to be quiet. We simply have to trust God. We simply have to let God be God, realize that we are just humans, and be good with that. We've entitled our study of the book of Job, "Seeing God in Our Suffering." And Job chapter number 38 is a time where we see God. We see how much He knows. Immortal, invisible, God only wise. He knows so much. And today, it's been my prayer and my burden for you that you would see how small you are. Not in an unkind way at all. But it's so healthy, it's so refreshing for us to see how small we are, to see how little we know, and to see how great God's knowledge is, so that we can just be quiet and rest in Him and say, "God, you do know what's best for my life." Friend, I hope that you're at that place. It begins by putting your faith and trust in Jesus Christ as Savior. He knows what's best in calling you unto salvation. And friend, it continues as a believer in Jesus Christ, simply trusting Him with your life. And so the question rings out, who really knows what's best? He does.
Visit us at 11164 Hanson Boulevard or online at coonrapidsbaptist.org.